Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Dearborn Heights, Michigan, earned a marketing degree from Michigan State University, and hired on with AT&T. At age 30, she led a $14 billion, with a B, project for AT&T. Since 2002, she's been the president and CEO of the Detroit Economic Club. As such, she's leading the effort for the National Summit to be held here in Detroit from June 15th through the 17th. Her name, Beth Chappell. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760, WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the president and CEO of the Detroit Economic Club, Beth Chappell. Beth, welcome. An honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack. What a pleasure it is to be with you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
That was a long time ago. Well, let's see. I am the proud product of my, obviously, my mother and father, who were both Ford Motor Company employees. And actually, both sets of grandparents from both sides of the family came from Europe to Michigan, Dearborn Heights, to work at Ford's. And when we grew up, it was always Ford's with an S on it, because it was always, that was part of the family that we were a part of. So I grew up in Dearborn Heights, had a pretty terrific childhood for the most part, and here I am.
What did you learn from your mom, and what did you learn from your dad?
Oh, my goodness. My mother is actually, she and I are very alike in many ways, but very, very opposite. My mother is as laid back as I am sometimes wound too tight, and she really taught me how to listen. There is nobody that meets my mother that doesn't immediately love her, and she's a pretty terrific listener, and I think that's a skill set that many can use improvement in, and I look myself in the mirror sometimes when I say that. So I think she really taught me how to listen to be heard, you know, rather than to respond, I guess.
And your dad?
My dad, I'm telling you, my dad had a very, very interesting background. He had asthma so severely as a young child that when the other boys were doing shop and all of that, he was doing typing and shorthand. And what that landed him was, after he was in the military with the FBI, he wound up at Ford Motor Company, as I just said. And in the administrative ranks, if you will, of the very senior management. So he had a bird's eye view of Ford Motor Company from the very top of the business years and years ago, which was very fascinating to me. And I think out of all of that, he really taught me how to write and to be succinct. My father could say in three sentences what it takes most people three pages of, you know, single space text. So he really taught me to get to the point.
My dad's 93. He could say in one word, no, still today. In the current issue of D Business, R.J. King asked a number of notables, what was your first job? Beth Chappell, what was your first job?
Oh, well, my first job was babysitting, which I started, my goodness, at 8 or 9, was, you know, helping my mom with my younger siblings. I'm the oldest of 4 kids. My first paying job that was with a company versus babysitting was at McDonald's. And I remember being so excited to get a job, any job, but really to get a job at McDonald's. I had it all organized before my 16th birthday, and I started my job on my 16th birthday. And I will tell you, Jack, I would highly, highly recommend a first job in a service business like that for any kid, because I learned so much there that to this day, I really carry with me.
You're still flipping burgers.
You know? Yeah, you know, I'll do whatever.
You get a marketing degree from Michigan State. Mm-hmm. You go to work for AT&T. You're 30 years old. And they say, Beth, we want you to lead a project that turned into a $14 billion with a B, dollar project. Talk about that.
I, among my many life blessings, Jack, having the opportunity and the privilege to work for AT&T is high, high on the list. I went to work there right out of college, right out of Michigan State, and they were interested in me as a salesperson, but I didn't want to be a salesperson. I went to school, and they taught me that I was really a business problem solver. And it was a distinction with a difference for me. It really began my quest of what I still believe is one of my passions in life, and that is solving business problems. Many years and many assignments later at AT&T, I was asked to deploy then what was the fiber network. So my team and I, and there were some 22,000 people on that team, literally pulled all the copper out of the ground in the late 80s and put in all of this wonderful fiber optics, which is still serving all of us very well to this day. But it was a monumental effort. And candidly, while I'd had many experiences in AT&T, I'm not an engineer by background. They really took somebody that was very focused on customers to lead literally an army of engineering and operations folks to make this project happen. So it was one of the most probably important experiences of my career.
You had to be younger than 95% of this army. How did you gain the respect of those elder people?
Well, there was an age thing, certainly, but candidly, there was even more of a chasm, and that was at that time in the business, if you weren't an engineer, you know, if you were a salesperson or a marketing type, there was that chasm also. And then, of course, there was the male and female. So it was a very, very, very interesting time. I think with the benefit of hindsight, I didn't understand personally at the time why anybody would put me in this position. I think with the benefit of hindsight, I'm pretty good and have always been pretty good at staying very focused on what needs to happen. And I think I've got a pretty good sense of customer. And it was really those two things, surviving in the marketplace against a competitor at that time who had dropped the pin, Sprint, and really sent AT&T, you know, scrambling to keep up technology-wise. So keeping focused on the customer was an enormous asset during that very, very crazy time of my career.
We're talking to Beth Chappell, who left this army and started a one-lady firm, a consulting firm. And when we come back, we'll ask her about that. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Beth Chappell. And you leave AT&T with its hundreds of thousands of employees, and you come back home, and you start a boutique consulting company, the Chappell Group. Why?
Oh, my. Well, actually, I was home at the time, just to be technically correct, and I was here with AT&T and had a very large regional sales organization, and loved it, loved it, loved it. I was on a career path at the time with AT&T where I was relocating every 2 years, every 18 to 24 months, whether I needed to or not. So it was on this path that brought me back home to Michigan at a time when, quite literally, my senior management team didn't know I was from Michigan. So I came home thinking that I was home for 18 to 24 months, and then I'd be back to corporate on my next assignment. But a very interesting thing happened, and that is I met my husband, and that changed a whole bunch of things. So my job at the time, I was living on airplanes. I had a big sales territory, and when our first two children came, I have twin boys, I took them on business trips with me. And then when our youngest came along, I toted three babies around the country on airplanes. And after a while, they get to a point where they kind of need to go to school. So that, candidly, really was the impetus for me to change my career, was my family and my children. And so I did. I went off on my own and started a boutique consulting business on strategy and other really wonderful things called the Chappell Group. And that was a very wonderful chapter in my life. I had the opportunity to work with people who I new on things of importance, and it was great. Made lots of mistakes along the way, by the way. I thought I knew everything there was about business, having all that huge responsibility and all those zeros on the end of both the financial statements and the employee statements at AT&T. And I learned some very difficult lessons transforming into an entrepreneur that, again, are just part of that next chapter of life.
In your business career, you've toiled in four very unique environments. AT&T, multi-billion dollar company, then this boutique consulting company, then with CompuWare, and now with the Detroit Economic Club. So you've had four distinct chapters in your business career. Talk about that experience.
Well, you know, I said earlier in our conversation how I really, I'm one of these people that if I watch TV, it's either news or crime-solving shows. So I really do have a passion for a lot of things. And I love to work, and I love to learn new things, and I love to solve business problems. I didn't start out, frankly, to have all of these different experiences. I really thought when I went to work at AT&T, I mean, I'm plenty old enough that back then you kind of thought you were going to work for the same company for a lifetime. And certainly that was the pattern in my family. So this was not a journey that I set about purposely to do. But with the benefit of hindsight, what a rich experience it has been. I mean, whether you're in a big company or a boutique company or a not-for-profit or a for-profit, I mean, the foundation points are very similar. You have a mission, whatever that mission is. You need to understand who your customers are, and whatever your product or service, whether you're big or small, it's all about customers and your people and trying to, you know, solve business problems and make a little money along the way.
A lot of our listeners tonight have worked for one company their whole life.
Right.
And with each passing day, it's more likely that that's going to change. You love adventure.
Right.
You thrive on change. A lot of these listeners say, I hate change.
Right.
What do you say to them, Beth?
I really do understand how scary it is. When I left the comfort and all of the perks, and I had a big executive job at the time at AT&T, and took that leap, as much as it was so exhilarating and exciting for me, and I am, as you mentioned, somebody that embraces and thrives on chaos, maybe would be a better way to say it. Not everybody is like that. My suggestion would be, what I've learned along the way is that really your gifts are your gifts. I mean, we all come into this world with gifts and challenges. You know, starting with who we are, that moment of conception and our DNA, and making the most of those gifts. I mean, you know what you're good at. You know what you like, what you don't like, and things that you may take for granted in that 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 year career with one organization is somebody else's. You know, oh my gosh, that's a skill set that I really need. Now, I realize there aren't a lot of jobs, if you will, in town, but so many entrepreneurial organizations were started during economic downturn times, and it is a very scary thing for most people. But we have resources now in this state through the Detroit Regional Chamber, through a lot of the jobs programs, where, boy, we've got great educational systems. Figuring out what your passion is, what your skill set is, and trying to turn that into something is one way to really look at that. It's not for everybody, but I think looking yourself in the mirror and knowing what your true north is really the beginning of any new journey.
You've successfully balanced being a mom of six, a wife, and a world-class business lady. How do you do it?
Well, first of all, thank you for saying I've successfully balanced. I'm not sure my children or my husband would agree with that assessment. It isn't, for me, it's an everyday thing. I mean, this is one of my, I guess, favorite subjects in a way, because I think so many people make it look so easy, and it is not, at least not for this person. I have six wonderful children. Three are grown, three are teenagers, four wonderful grandchildren, and a wonderful husband. At the end of the day, all of the people in my life require time, and it's time that I want to give. You do the math, and you know, the more that you have, the more time that's required. But it's so important. It's such important time. So balancing for me is an everyday thing. I live meticulously by my calendar. I schedule casual time. I schedule family time. And for me, it's just a way to make it from here to there. But it is a huge challenge, I think, for all of us that are doing so many things now.
Today's Mother's Day.
Aww.
You know a lot of great moms. What do those great moms have in common?
Oh, love for their children, boundaries, a real desire and want for better for your kids than you had. And that, to me, I don't necessarily mean monetary things. You just want the very best for your children. And one of the challenges I think we all face is we don't get a how-to book and we do the very best that we can. I do think boundaries are very important. And I love all of my children. I love to be close to them, and I love, you know, that communication, but I don't want to be their best friend. I mean, I'm not their best friend. I'm their mom.
You talk boundaries, tough love. It's so tough for parents today to have tough love.
Right.
What counsel or advice do you give to a mom about tough love?
Well, I think we all have our own way and our own journeys. I mean, one of the things, and by the way, I'll raise my hand and say I'm far, far, far from the perfect mom. I don't know if there is such a thing out there. But I will say one of the things that I have tried to do with my children is if I say something, I mean it. So I try, and it's really hard when you're really frustrated and you want to tell them that they'll never have dinner for the rest of the month or that, you know, they'll never go out again. But I really, really try to not say things that I don't mean. And conversely, when I say things, mean them. Because it's really hard when all of a sudden the consequences, it's time for the consequences and you're not quite up for the battle. But you got to be.
We're talking to Beth Chappell. And since 2002, she's been the president and CEO of the Detroit Economic Club, which is the number 3 such forum in the world. Talk. We'll ask her about that. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Beth Chappell. Beth, the Detroit Economic Club, the number 3 such forum in the whole world. How did you do it?
Well, it was not just me. I have a great, great team who helped together with a wonderful board of directors and a lot of people rebuild, if you will, the Detroit Economic Club. We are celebrating our 75th anniversary this year. This organization is a not-for-profit, nonpartisan organization that was actually created at the tail end of the Great Depression in 1934. And our forefathers thought that it was very important to have a venue to discuss and engage in the great business, government, social, and other issues of our day. To this day, that remains our platform, and it's a wonderful organization with a really long and wonderful history. As with any organization, we go through ups and downs, and so we have been, over the last several years, trying to do what any good business does is, you know, look at your value proposition and dust it off, polish it up, and make something even more wonderful out of it. So we have had the privilege of hosting, the Detroit Economic Club has, of hosting every U.S. sitting president since Richard Nixon. We have notable CEOs from across the country and across the world come to Detroit many, many times a year. And we're very proud of that, very proud.
You call up leaders from all over America in every venue, and you ask them to come to Detroit to speak on their own dime. How do you get them to do that?
Yeah. Well, they've been doing it for 75 years, Jack, so I feel like I am the current leader of many that have gone before me. Detroit, you know, for all of the tough times and really horrible times that we're going through right now, has always been a center for leaders to come to. I mean, we are the heart of innovation in this country. And if I told you that it's not all that difficult to get people to come to Detroit, I hope that wouldn't surprise you. It would surprise many. time is the thing that we all have that is so precious. The time of a CEO leading a large corporation or a small corporation for that matter is very, very precious. So we get them to come for several reasons. One is they look at those who have come before them and think that this is a prestigious podium, that the audience and the members of the Detroit Economic Club are the audience that they want to reach out to. And we've got great, great partners, with WJR being one of them, by the way, where we partner on media opportunities. So we've built a pretty terrific value proposition, we believe, for these folks. We know they have a lot of places that they can go with their very, very precious time, but they choose to come here. And I feel honored by that every single time we host a Detroit Economic Club meeting. And as you say, they come of their choice without honorariums and without expenses being paid.
You and your team arguably are wedding planners.
I say that.
you have a meeting. The speaker's fantastic. But you do 40 of these a year, so that one's done. Now we've got to plan this next wedding. Talk about being a wedding planner.
I do use that terminology. I say to folks that participating in the Detroit Economic Club or being on the team, on the staff team, is like planning and implementing 40-some weddings a year. Because while the speakers are very, very important, what we are really all about is our members. And so when you join the Detroit Economic Club, that not only gives you the opportunity, and by the way, you can join us, you can try us before you buy us. You know, we welcome people to come to meetings to have that experience, but it really is all about the people in the audience and in the room. So we work very, very hard to be sure that when people come, that they get what they're looking for. So many companies buy a table of 10 to come to our meetings. Well, we talk to them and say, do you really want a table of 10, or would you like 10 tickets and we'll put you at 10 tables? So is your objective to network with other people, in which case that would be an option? Or a lot of people use their table of 10 as employee recognition. So who you sit next to, who you connect with, the more that we can understand what you're trying to get out of this experience, the more that we try to accommodate that. So it does, there's a lot more going on behind door number one, to your point, than would be intuitively obvious when you walk into the room.
Talk to us about your famous dictum, the five F words.
The five F words. I have never quite said it that way, Jack, so now you have coined that for me. Well, the first three are were teachings from one of my very favorite bosses at AT&T. I had many wonderful bosses, but Bernie Sergesketter was just one of my all-time favorites. And he had a saying called fair, firm, and friendly that not only do I love, and he and I worked together now probably 15 years ago, probably 20 years ago, but I have really carried that forward, fair, firm, and friendly. And if you think about that, there's a lot in those three words in terms of how you conduct yourself and who you are, you know, in the business world or in any world. And then my other two that I like to connect with that are facts are friends. So if you have the facts, if you understand, you know, what the reality is versus, you know, what is a little mushier than facts, and then if you behave in a way that's fair, firm, and friendly, it's just served me very well.
In another 5 or 6 weeks, a huge wedding.
Ooh, the
Maybe
National
the largest
Summit.
Wedding
yes.
ever. The National Summit. Talk to us about the National Summit.
Oh, the National Summit, June 15th, 16th, 17th. We're hosting America's Conversation. The National Summit is a big vision that is coming to reality on June 15th, 16th, and 17th, right here in Detroit at the Detroit Marriott at the Renaissance Center. And Jack, this is the culmination of a very big vision shared by myself and our board of directors and our stakeholders. Whereas we started planning this 2 years ago, before any huge national recession, back when Michigan was in a one-state recession, candidly. And it was all driven from the fact that we believed back then, and of course, as events have unfolded in these ensuing months, that in the early months of a new presidential administration, that it would be so important for people to come together, cross-country, cross-industry, business, government, academia, labor, and other leaders and participants to help define the future of America. And we're doing that in four areas: technology, energy, environment, manufacturing. We have hundreds of people who are working with us on this. We've got 60-plus confirmed CEOs coming from all over the country. We're working now on senior government officials in the new administration. It's going to be quite a big deal. And right here in our backyard in Detroit.
Who should attend, Beth Chapel?
I would invite every person listening to this show to attend. I would invite everybody from across America to attend. Now, of course, we can't fit everybody in the, you know, Detroit Marriott, but there are many ways to attend. One is in person, and we would really urge your listeners to visit nationalsummit.org for more information. Tickets are going pretty quickly. We are pretty confident we're going to sell out several weeks before the event. So that's very exciting. But we also are encouraging people to come from other places as well as participate online. So we want people to weigh in on the issues. We're going to use audience response technology. We've got great partners in the form of McKinsey, Ernst & Young, Deloitte, PricewaterhouseCoopers working with us on content. We've got probably 200 people from the community involved in this. We want to welcome America to Detroit at these very, very, very critical time in our city, in our state, and in our country's future to engage people in this national conversation.
What's the format? A three-day event. What's the format?
We're going to have many exciting components. We have a town hall structure that are where we're bringing America's leadership to engage with the participants, and then audience response will help the folks in the audience weigh in on the issues. We're going to have a CEO summit that will be an exclusive opportunity for our invited speakers that are coming from all over the country. We've got a great, great entrepreneurial small business innovation component called the Innovation Expo, where you can come and see really cool new technologies from all over the country. And it's just going to be great. At the end of every day, we're going to sum it up. And probably most exciting, Jack, is we are not looking at this as a meeting. This is not a meeting. It's not a three-day event. It is a three-day event that will hopefully become the beginning of an ongoing process. When we walk out of the Marriott on June 17th, we are going to have America's to-do list in each of these important areas, technology, energy, environment, manufacturing, defined per the participants and the leadership in the National Summit. Then we hope to use Detroit Economic Club meetings over the next ensuing year. We'll be publishing, we'll be rebroadcasting, and if we do this right, we have an opportunity to host a national summit in 2010. Now, we'll make that decision after 2009, so we're all really focused on hitting it out of the park, if you will, this year. But it is a very, very exciting opportunity that is getting great, great traction, not just here in Michigan, but nationally. And that's really important for us to be the convener of a national conversation at a time that our country so desperately needs it.
We're with the most extraordinary lady, Beth Chapel, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with a world-class wedding planner, Beth Chapel, who's planning the biggest wedding she's ever planned, this national summit, nationalsummit.org, June 15th through the 17th. And Beth, you talked that there are four topics: technology, energy, environment, and manufacturing. Why those four?
Well, when we start, first of all, we ask people to think of technology, energy, environment, manufacturing as not industries, as not necessarily topics per se, but as disciplines, things that most of us have one or more of those components in our everyday business. When we started planning the National Summit at the time and continuing still, these themes keep coming up. And as we sat back and started thinking about this, I mean, first from a manufacturing perspective, but then as we got broader, if you think about what we need to do in this country, and if I listen to the voices at the Detroit Economic Club podium, which is really the inspiration or much of the inspiration from this or for this, There's always a rallying cry about things that we need to understand more about so that we make future decisions that make sense in this country. And the patterns to me tended to revolve around technology, energy, environment, manufacturing. There are so many things that we can talk about, and these four areas are huge, I mean, in each of their own individual rights. But if you think about the future of our country, these four areas are also inextricably intertwined. I mean, you cannot talk about solid manufacturing policy if you don't talk about energy policy. You can't talk about the environment if you're not paying attention to what's going on in the energy space or the technology space. And obviously, technology is an enabler for all of this. So, and within this, I mean, we will be talking about other issues, you know, as they relate. Healthcare is a big theme throughout the National Summit, but it falls into all of those areas. So we'll be talking about healthcare and technology, if you will, in the technology track. So we really are looking at a very broad set of issues that really, in order to make progress in one area in this country, and it's not just policy, I mean, it's business actions too, you really need to do it in the context of the other three.
You meet world-class leaders week after week.
Oh, yeah.
And you're blessed in that you get to spend one-on-one time with them. What are some of the biggest things they've taught you?
Oh, my. You know, boy, there's been so many. You know, one of the consistent themes, we have a great student program, and our speakers always spend time with our students prior to the regular program. It's a terrific, terrific part of what we do. And one of the things that is a huge pattern in what these speakers tell the kids, and from the podium also, is to be passionate about what you do. I mean, you have to enjoy what you do in order to do it well. And I'm often struck by how huge these people are in terms of stature and their job responsibilities. And it really comes down to some simple themes at the end of the day. So I think that is, I mean, they talk about their subjects. There's so many things. And by the way, what a privilege it is for me and my team, you know, to partake in all of that. But from a big picture perspective, this whole theme of, you know, taking advantage of your gifts and loving what you do and then working hard at it really comes through over and over again.
You've stated that one of the most impressive guests was Dr. Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
Spend a minute about that.
You know, it's so hard to pick most impressive guests, so I need to quickly say that I learn from everybody, and I've just had such, I tease their handlers. When I get them in my clutches for a few hours, I have such an opportunity to learn so many things. But Dr. Kissinger is one of the many who stands out, and when you ask me that, Jack, it's hard for me to put a finger on it. What I want to say is I felt at the time when he was our guest that I had an opportunity to get inside of his head for a few minutes. And what a wonderful place that must be inside of Dr. Kissinger's head. I mean, his experience, the questions he asked, the way he comes at things, his knowledge of the world, his views on things, you know, I felt practically mesmerized that whole day. It was just, and I feel that way a lot. It's a tremendous opportunity to, I don't know, be up close and personal with some of our world's greatest thinkers and biggest leaders.
You're a mom, you're a wife, you're a world-class business lady. Your confidence, your courage just screams through these airwaves. If there's a listener tonight that says, Beth, I'm afraid for my family, for my husband, for my job, what do you say to him or her?
Well, I think we're all afraid. I think we're all afraid. We are afraid in different ways. I am very confident about many things, and like all of us, we all have our insecurities, and I think in this economic environment, there's a lot to be afraid of. So I guess for starters, not to feel bad about feeling afraid. It's a very scary time for all of us. People who have lost their jobs, I think many of us who didn't think, you know, who thought we were sitting fine for retirement are all looking at our 401ks turned into 201ks. And no matter how many zeros are at the end of that, and fewer as time goes on, I really think this is a time that we need to pay attention. I believe it's a time that, you know, for those of us who have parents or grandparents that hail from the Great Depression, all of a sudden they're sounding a lot smarter than they've sounded the last, you know, 30 or 40 years. I'm afraid, but I think we're all going to learn some very good things out of this. And getting back to basics for many of us, at least I'll raise my hand, me for starters and my family, is not such a bad thing.
Are you still hopeful about America and Michigan?
I am extraordinarily hopeful about America and Michigan. I mean, one of the big drivers for me are my four grandchildren. I mean, I love my kids and my family, but I look at my three-year-old granddaughter, Allison, and my six-week-old grandson, Evan, and I say, my goodness, we adults, we grown-ups have to do something to make a difference. And I think we can all make a difference in our own way. And shame on us if we don't come up to the plate, step up to the plate, and do what we think we can do to make a difference. And in our little world at the Detroit Economic Club, what we do 35 to 45 times a year by bringing these voices to Detroit, and now this national summit, is our way of, we hope, contributing to that very thing.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I would give the advice that I just mentioned a few minutes ago, that I hear our speakers give, and it's been one that's worked for me. I mean, first of all, take a look in the mirror and find those gifts and talents and make the most of them, and just working hard. I mean, it amazes me how a little hard work, a little elbow grease, whatever it is that you're doing, the luckier you get, the more of that you put in place. So,
Beth Chappell? You're a treasure for this area. You're a positive voice for this area. You're a great role model for this area. So thanks for all you do. Keep it up.
Thank you, Jack. What a privilege it's been. Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Crisula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. It's ball.
Believe in yourself. I'm